Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. The 50th International Eucharistic Congress begins in Dublin, inaugurated on the day the Church celebrates the Feast of Corpus Christi. Monsignor Philip Whitmore brings us a musical comment on the fifth mystery of light, the institution of the Eucharist. On Sunday, the 10th of June, the 50th International Eucharistic Congress in Dublin opens its doors to the faithful, many of whom have travelled across the globe to participate. At the heart of the Congress, which takes place every 4 years, is the daily celebration of the Eucharist. So what better date to choose for its inauguration than the date we celebrate the Feast of Corpus Christi, which commemorates the institution of the Holy Eucharist. The Congress programme also includes other liturgical events, cultural events, catechesis, testimonies and workshops, aiming to promote an awareness of the central place of the Eucharist in the life and mission of the Catholic Church, as well as help improve our understanding and celebration of the liturgy, and draw attention to the social dimension of the Eucharist. Emma McCarthy, who is in Dublin attending the Congress for Vatican Radio, agreed to chat to me briefly before she set off and told me about the run-up to the event and also about her own expectations. Hello, Emma. Thank you for agreeing to speak to me about the upcoming Congress just before you set off. Are you excited to be going, first of all?
Well, yes, I am. Of course, I'm going home because being an Irish person, this really is a homecoming for us. And it's very exciting, the idea that we're going to celebrate not only in the Irish Church, but we're also going to have thousands of people from other countries coming to celebrate with us, which will be a first in a long time for the people of Ireland.
Have you any idea of how many people so far, as the Congress starts, have registered?
Well, the last count on registration was anywhere upwards towards 70,000 people, but that's not including the foreign pilgrims, who are between 7,000 and 12,000. And of course, as the organiser said, Father Kevin Doran, Irish people tend to leave things to the last minute. So we'll have to take it a day-to-day basis, and we're hoping that as the week unfolds, more and more people will be encouraged to come.
You say the Irish leave it till the last moment, but my impression is that it's extremely well organised.
Yes, well, the organisation has been ongoing for 2 years, four actually, if we're going to be honest, because it was 4 years ago that Benedict XVI announced at the last Congress in Quebec that he had chosen Dublin as the location for this, the 50th Congress. So Archbishop Martin and his very close team of collaborators have really been working very, very hard. And what's most interesting about this Congress, it's the first time I can remember that I've seen such a large participation of the laity in Ireland, who tend to be not lazy, but they're always a bit backward about being concretely involved in the church life. This time, however, I have to say the pastoral programme was prepared and was put into practice completely by a very dedicated, very passionate group of lay people. Colette Furlong was the lady who actually went around the country to tell people about the pastoral programme, who drew it up and who taught people about it. Herself and her staff have been doing amazing work. So yes, it's been a long time coming, and I really can't wait for it to open up and begin.
Could this be because the church in Ireland is going through a difficult moment and the people feel the need to really do something constructive to start a renewal?
Absolutely. I mean, in his letter to Irish Catholics in 2010, Pope Benedict wrote that he hoped the Congress would be part of the process of renewal for the Church in Ireland, which has been lacerated by the tragedy of the abuse scandal of minors by members of the same church. He said it's not a solution, but what he wanted to do was gather the Irish Church around what is the central focus of our faith, the Eucharist, the presence of the risen Christ in our midst, and from there draw the strength to really sit down, meditate and reflect on where we're going as a church. The Holy Father, I think, has a very specific aim for this Congress, and that is to bring people back to the simple tenets of the faith, to go beyond the newspaper headlines, to go beyond all criticism and really come back to think about why we are a church, what we believe in, why we believe in it, and to gather strength from being together. But not only, the organisers also wanted this Congress to go beyond just the simple church in Ireland. And they've organised opening up the churches in the city centre of Dublin. Dublin is the largest populous centre in Ireland. And it is also, shall we say, the most secularised part of Ireland. So the organisers decided, well, we can't just be ourselves, the church closed in on ourselves. We have to, if we are going to be a church, open out to wider society. So the idea is these churches will be open during the evenings as people leave their offices, as people leave their homes, as they go shopping. And there will be people on the streets who will invite the general public to come in for a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, to learn a little bit more about why we are Catholics, what we believe in. And I think that that's also a very important part of bringing the Congress, bringing the church onto the streets of the city.
Obviously, at the centre of the Congress is the celebration of the Eucharist. And I understand that there'll be a liturgy every day, but there are a lot of other events organised as well. What do you think you will be witnessing? What will you participate in?
Well, I can't get to everything because there's so much going on. There really is. It's a week-long Congress, opening with the Mass Sunday. And then Monday to Friday, each day has a theme. Monday is our communion in our common baptism. So the focus is ecumenism. And we have representatives and indeed some leaders of the other Christian churches in Ireland who will be attending and giving key talks there, but also from around the world. Brother Alois from the Teze community, Archbishop Michael Jackson, who of course is the Archbishop, the Anglican Archbishop of Dublin, Metropolitan Hilarion, and many, many other speakers. That'll be very interesting. It's the first time a Eucharistic Congress has actually had an ecumenical emphasis. Tuesday is the family, so we'll have people from the Irish Church who are involved in pastoral work and outreach to families, but not only from the Irish Church. Wednesday is a very important day because it's a day focused on vocations and specifically vocations to the priesthood. We know vocations have fallen in Ireland, not just in Ireland, but in other Western countries. So it's looking at the idea of the mystery of the Eucharist in the life of priests. And it won't just be priests talking on Wednesday. It'll also be people talking about how we need to encourage vocations, how we need to take care of our priests, and on the dialogue between the priest and his parish community. Thursday is probably the day that's going to draw most media attention because Thursday is a day that's going to focus on reconciliation and renewal. Now, the day will have speakers such as Cardinal Turkson from the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. It will have Cardinal Sean Brady, who is the Primate of All Ireland, Archbishop of Armagh. It will also have a young man who was blinded by a bullet during the unrest in Northern Ireland in the 80s and 90s in the last century, who's going to speak about his journey of reconciliation and renewal. He actually sought out the man, the British soldier who had shot him and blinded him. And he speaks about that journey, which is, I think, is going to be a very moving and powerful testimony. But during that day, we're also going to have a liturgy of reconciliation. Some of the texts that are going to be read during that liturgy will have been written by survivors of child abuse within the church in Ireland, those who want to take part. And there will also be a space given to workshops and talks on the scourge and the scandal of sexual abuse of minors and indeed of people within the church by members of the church, and of safeguarding practices within the church, not only in Ireland, but in other churches, to make sure this never happens again. So that will probably be a day that will draw an awful lot of media attention. Friday instead will have perhaps less media attention, but I think it's going to be one of the most moving days because Friday is focusing on suffering, so the sick, about bringing Christ and the Eucharist to those who are really going through perhaps the most difficult time in their life. We're going to see masses being celebrated in hospices throughout Ireland. We're going to have live links at some of these hospices, so where people are being cared for, terminally ill people are being cared for who can't come to the Congress, to make them a part, to make them know that we haven't forgotten them, and also to emphasise to lay Catholics, lay Christians and people in general that these people who are suffering should be our priority in society. They're not on the sidelines, they're not to be forgotten, but they're very central. If we believe in communion, then they should be a very central part of our communion. And then Saturday, which will be the last day of the Congress, we will have the conclusions and, of course, that great closing mass, the Statio Orbis, which will see, we hope, up to 80,000 people gathered into one of Ireland's biggest stadiums. And we hope to have a message from Pope Benedict the 16th, closing off the week of prayer and reflection. I really do hope it's going to be a great week because Ireland really needs it at the moment. And I think we need something to lift us up, and this could be the occasion.
Well, we look forward to hearing from you throughout the week. And just let's remind our listeners to tune in every day because you will be with us with the latest.
Indeed, from Dublin.
From Dublin. Thank you, Eimear.
Thank you, Linda.
As Eimear mentioned, the Congress itself has been 4 years in preparation. And Eimear herself has been involved in following the run-up for quite a long time. In this programme that she prepared, she shines the light on the work and the prayers of a community of enclosed Cistercian nuns who have been busy for months producing the hosts for the Eucharistic Congress.
In the silence of an ancient abbey nestled amid the woodlands and waterways of Ireland's Blackwater Valley, a community of 35 nuns have been praying and working towards Congress. They are Ireland's only community of enclosed Cistercian women religious from St. Mary's Abbey, Glencairn, and they have been given the task of producing the 250,000 Eucharistic breads for consecration at the Masses, which will be the focal point of the 50th International Eucharistic Congress, taking place in Dublin, Ireland, from June 10th to 17th. In their own way, and according to their specific charism, they too are answering the call to Congress, to communion with Christ and with one another.
Well, essentially, our whole existence here revolves around the Eucharistic celebration. And being an enclosed order, we don't leave the premises. So we are very lucky in that we are very focused on God and his presence here with us.
Sister Fiacra Nutty is a former horticulturist and describes herself as a late vocation to the order who hopes to make her solemn profession later this year. It's no surprise, then, that this community was chosen by IEC 2012 organisers to produce the hosts for the June Congress. The breads themselves, Sister Fiacra reveals, will only have two very simple ingredients, a special altar bread flour and Glencairn's own pure spring water from the Blackwater River that flows through the valley.
Part of our day is really dedicated to God, and that includes our work periods as well.
Definitely the old rule, ora et labora, work and prayer. And therefore,
yeah.
It's no surprise that you have a very specific and particular role in the lead up to the Eucharistic Congress. Your prayers for the success of the Congress, but also a practical role. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, we're very fortunate here, actually, to have a whole business which produces Eucharistic bread for consecration at Masses. And we started that business in 1981, and we have really grown exponentially ever since. And we just feel very, very privileged to have spent the last couple of months, and indeed continue to work, towards the production of 250,000 hosts especially for the Eucharistic Congress coming up in June.
That's an awful lot of work for a small community. Tell us a little bit more about the actual process of making the bread.
It's actually quite simple because we only have two ingredients that go into our hosts, and that's our own spring water here at Glencairn, coupled with very specialist ultra bread flour. And essentially we make those two things into a batter, which we cook on an automatic machine and subsequently stamp them out or cut them according to the size that's required. So we produce the hosts both in white and in brown. And as I say, we make them in a whole variety of sizes because we have discovered that, for instance, cathedrals might like a very large host and then all the sizes down to what we call the people's host.
Yes. Is there anything specific or special about the host you're preparing for the Eucharistic Congress? Is there a particular symbol that's being stamped?
We're actually not doing that because our whole focus here as Cistercians is to make life, if you like, as simple as possible and focused on God. So we tend to steer away from the idea of stamping things or making anything very ornate in any way. But the difference with the bread that we actually produce here is that it's more substantial than the altar bread that you will find elsewhere. In other words, the hosts are just that little bit thicker. And the idea of this really is that according to the general instruction of the Roman Missal dating back to the renewed liturgy of Vatican II, it was suggested that we should try to produce hosts that are large enough to be broken and shared, and also that they are substantially like bread rather than just a wafer. So that's what makes our hosts different to perhaps what people would normally expect to receive.
In fact, the Congress theme, the Eucharist, communion with Christ and with one another, has its very roots in the Vatican II dogmatic constitution on the Church. The ecclesiology of the Second Vatican Council is an ecclesiology of communion, and in a world in which many forms of community have collapsed, the Church not only is communion, but also has, as an essential element of her mission, the task of proposing building up and sustaining forms of community, including religious community. And in this task, as Benedict XVI has often said, the cloistered religious have a very special and fundamental part to play in their life of meditation, reflection and prayer. What you have described is a very visual, which might seem strange for radio, but a very visual idea of what this Congress is all about and what Pope Benedict desired for this Congress in Ireland, a return to the basics, to simplicity, and also to renewal in sharings. What are your hopes as an enclosed religious community for the Congress?
Well, I think our whole being here over the last number of months has been focused on praying for the fruits of the Congress, because it's no news to anybody that our Church is experiencing great difficulties at the moment. But we really do see this Congress as a means to build up the Church again. So we've certainly been praying for that. We've also, with great joy, learnt the hymn that's associated with the whole Congress, and we actually sing it quite regularly here, especially on Sundays, so that we're spreading the message in song. And we're also hoping that some of our sisters will be able to attend some of the events during the Eucharistic Congress, and a number of them will be there at the Statio Orbis on the final day. And then on top of this, as an enclosed order, we also have the joy of being able to follow all the events online. So So all told, we feel we are very much a part of the Eucharistic Congress, albeit that we do observe our rules of enclosure quite strictly. But nevertheless, in spirit and in prayer, we hope to join with the wider church.
Which, of course, is your specific charism as an enclosed order. And I can remember the Holy Father on his most recent trip to a visit to an enclosed order, who said that your prayer is really what keeps, it's the motor of the Universal Church and of his own ministry. So keep on, as they say, the good work there. Thank you very much, Sister Fielke, for taking time out of your very hectic schedule to actually speak to us today here on Vatican Radio.
Not at all. Thank you very much for having me.
Thousand pilgrims have registered to be part of the Dublin experience this June. Why not join them, like the sisters at Glencairn, in communion with Christ and with one another? All information is available at the website iec2012.ie. I'm Emer McCarthy.
Thanks there to Emer McCarthy for that programme. And now we bring you a musical comment on the fifth Mystery of Light, the Institution of the Eucharist, by Monsignor Philip Whitmore, in a programme produced by Veronica Scaresbrick.
While they were at supper, Jesus took the bread, blessed it, and broke it, gave it to his disciples, and said, take, eat, this is my body. This musical account of the institution of the Eucharist comes from J.S. Bach's setting of the Passion According to St. Matthew, written in 1729 for the Good Friday liturgy at St. Thomas's Church in Leipzig. Bach had the inspired idea of giving Jesus a kind of musical halo all through the St. Matthew Passion. Whenever Jesus speaks, he's accompanied by the strings. Listen to his next words. He took the cup and blessed it, gave it to them and said, drink this, all of you. This is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. These words of Jesus, so familiar to us from the Mass, are the heart of the mystery we're reflecting upon today, the institution of the Eucharist, the last of the mysteries of light. As we pray this mystery, we might choose to reflect upon the famous painting of the Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci, showing Christ at table with the 12 apostles. We might choose to ponder some of the Eucharistic hymns attributed to St. Thomas Aquinas, such as the Adoro Te Devote or the Tantum Ergo Sacramentum. Or we might want to listen to some of the great wealth of Eucharistic music written in honour of the Blessed Sacrament. Of the many Eucharistic texts that have been set to music, one of the finest is surely the O Sacrum Convivium. In just a few words, it manages to express a great wealth of Eucharistic theology. It comes from the liturgy of the Feast of Corpus Christi. In fact, it's the Magnificat antiphon for Second Vespers. O sacred banquet in which we partake of Christ, His sufferings are remembered, our minds are filled with his grace, and we receive a pledge of the glory that is to be ours. Setting by Thomas Tallis is one of the glories of English 16th century music. But now I'd like to play you a much more recent setting as a contrast. It's by Olivier Messiaen, and it's one of the very few pieces of liturgical choral music that he wrote. For those of you who know some music theory, I should mention that it's in F sharp major, a most unusual key with six sharps in the key signature. Already that gives us a clue that he's aiming to evoke a mysterious atmosphere, taking us out of the familiar into a world of infinite peace and light as we contemplate Christ present in the Eucharist. Slow, meditative beginning as we ponder the great mystery of the Eucharistic banquet, the bread of angels on which our souls can feed, the music gradually builds up in intensity, reaching a climax on the words, Et future gloriae nobis pinius datur. A pledge of future glory is given to us. As we move towards the end of the piece, the mystical, meditative atmosphere of the opening returns. It's as if we're in the presence of Christ, who has given himself to us in the Eucharist and enabled us to share eternal life with him. The music seems to fade away into the distance. Time stops. We are left to commune with our Blessed Lord in peace, in tranquility, in everlasting joy.
My thanks go to Veronica Scaresbrick for that programme. That's all from the English feature programme today and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at the same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus. Thank you.